Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the Lob podcast from These Football Times. Tonight, we're going to be reviewing the Championship season that had just gone, but with a real focus on three teams who had very differing outcomes to their campaign. I'm John Dunn. Part of my role is working with Leicester City as one of their commentators for Foxes Hub, their in-house media channel, TV and radio commentary, so I can pick up on the champions and their rise back to the Premier League. Matthew Gibbs, football writer, has had a tougher season following Birmingham City. Looking through their string of managers, it ended with a final day relegation despite beating Norwich City on the final day. Hello, Matthew. Sorry, I know you're still in mourning. We've had less than a week and we've kind of dragged you into to relive it all straight away.
Oh, you know, it's all right. It's what we always say. You hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I think we knew our fate was coming a few weeks ago.
And then we've got Dave Bowler, again, another football writer, but has been lead contributor to the Ipswich Town programme over the last couple of seasons, which has coincided with two promotions. So maybe it's Dave that can take all the credit rather than Kieran McKenna. Good evening, Dave.
Never worked when I was at the Albion.
Surely once. There was definitely...
Well, occasionally.
So suppose, should we rip the plaster off it? Should we head straight to the basement of the Championship table? Rotherham went some time ago. Huddersfield went with probably a week remaining. But Matthew, Birmingham City went into that final day with a chance of staying up. Does it sum up the Championship that all of the teams that could have gone down all won on the final day, meaning your victory against Norwich in the end meant nothing and you're back into that third tier for the first time since 1995, I think?
1993, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing for all of the teams. I think it was, at the end of the day, it was only Huddersfield out of the bottom half that lost on the last day. Everybody else, even higher up, everyone won. Pretty amazing, really, and kind of unlucky in a lot of ways to be going down to the third tier and finishing on 50 points, which I think only a handful of clubs in the history of the Championship, history of the second tier has done that. But I don't know if we can have many complaints, really. We've kind of done this to ourselves, whether it's... Well, I mean, just to look at the statistics there, where we've used 32 footballers this season and had seven different players as captain and six different men lead us out in the dugout. So there have been a whole myriad of reasons why we are here. I don't necessarily think that just sacking John Eustace is the reason why we're in this mess, but it's definitely the first of a catalogue of bad decisions. Appointing Wayne Rooney, letting Kevin Long, one of our defenders, go in January, one of our senior defenders, which is doing right by him, but leaving us very short at the back. When Tony Mowbray was taken ill, not something that anyone could have foreseen, but not replacing him straight away instead of handing the reins to his assistant, Mark Venus, who is a very good assistant manager, but was a very reluctant head coach. And I think that reflected in some very poor results. But yeah, I think ultimately this season has been about mentality and leadership and the total lack of both that we've had on the pitch. Using the word that John Eustace used a lot last summer was robustness. We had a definite lack of robustness on the pitch in terms of physicality of the players, and then it's a real lack of leadership. We lost a few senior players last summer with the likes of George Friend, Troy Deeney leaving. That left John Ruddy, Kevin Long and Lukas Jukovic as the sort of the senior men in the squad, and I think that showed. I think we needed a bit more, especially when it was such a transition season. And yeah, I think it's very disappointing, but it's avoidable and we've done this to ourselves.
You mentioned the John Eustace thing. Does that hurt that he then kept Blackburn up almost to your expense? And I suppose from the outside looking in, everyone kind of comes back to John Eustace leaving as the start of what seemed like that decline. It feels, although you like you say, it's not the reason, it feels like the main reason it rocked the boat that probably didn't need rocking at that particular time you were flying.
Yeah, I think it's the instigator. I would say, I think we did a podcast for These Football Times after the sacking, and I said at the time that if he'd have been sacked 2 weeks before, I reckon there would have been not that much, not as much media furor as there was, because we had, I think it was September, we didn't score a goal. We lost three or four games, didn't score a goal. It was pretty bad. There were some pretty rotten performances. But sacking Eustace when we did, replacing him with Wayne Rooney, who is essentially like a mate's hire. He's very close with Gary Cook, our CEO, and so him being appointed as manager with a bit of a, I think he did a good job at Derby, but the job at DC United is a bit more average. And then just from the first day, just throwing players under the bus, destroying all the confidence that John Eustace had worked so hard to build up in our squad, especially after like however many years of finishing between 17th and 20th we've had. I think that just ripped the bottom out from under the squad and just left with a very frail mentality. I think a lot of our players are like very sort of prone to having that confidence ripped away and that affecting performances. I mean, using an example, our striker, Scott Hogan, hasn't scored since August, has always been a very hot and cold striker. Scored a fantastic hat-trick last season away at West Bromwich Albion, but since then ran very hot and cold and just symptomatic of the squad, really. But yeah, not that I ever thought John Eustace was really the man to overtake us, you know, into the playoffs or get promoted, but he did not deserve to be sacked in the way that he was or when he was. And I'm genuinely happy for him as a person, because I think he was always a very, very respectable man in our dugout and treated the players right, treated the fans right. And I'm glad that he at least kept Blackburn up, even if it meant our demise.
Dave, just to bring you in, I suppose, you've watched from outside as I have and kind of seen Birmingham over the years competing with the Albion, who obviously we follow and always been close competitors. What's been your view of Birmingham from what you've seen and what you've kind of understood this season?
I mean, they've been unfortunate this season, as Matthew says. I mean, perhaps they've had, you know, they just run out of luck after a few seasons where it might have happened. But to get 50 points and go down is tough. When you look at it, the teams above it, Plymouth, Argyle, Sheffield Wednesday, Blackburn Rovers, QPR, maybe even Stoke. I mean, are Birmingham a worse side than any of them? I don't know. I mean, it's all much of a muchness, isn't it, I think, really, in there. Obviously, Matthew knows far better, but I take his point about, you know, John Eustace's sacking isn't the, you know, the only thing that's gone wrong. But the appointment of Wayne Rooney, I mean, it was a let's run before we can walk thing with a new ownership. It was one of those, okay, we're in charge now. Let's make a big marquee sort of statement. And I think in fairness to the ownership at Blues, it's something that they've learned from since then. You know, I think Tony Mowbray was a good, solid appointment when they got to him in January. And I think if Tony hadn't gone away, I think Blues would have been okay. You know, I find it hard to believe that they would have gone down. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing you can't legislate for. But again, as Matthew says, they really should have grabbed hold of that much, much quicker. You know, I think there was a hope at one point that Tony would only be away for, you know, perhaps six or seven games and then he'd come back or whatever. And I think that probably confused things a little bit. If Gary Rowett had come in perhaps four or five games earlier, yeah, you're looking at 1, 2, 3 points, aren't you? That's all you've got to find. That said, as Matthew, I'm sure, will point out, two games away at Huddersfield and Rotherham, that's three games, and you only managed to get 2 points out of that. You're asking for trouble, aren't you, really? I mean, that was a glorious opportunity there to get at least 4 points out of that, and then you're home and hosed, aren't you?
And that's something that points to the sort of mentality of the squad, where we've had 7 sellouts at St Andrews this season, and we've won all 7. And we had an absolutely storming performance against Coventry a few weeks ago, beat them 3-0, barely gave them a kick or game. We were pretty magnificent. It was very surprising how magnificent we were, really. And then we go into 2 away games against the 2 worst teams in the division. We can't score against Rotherham. We're the only team in the division that didn't score against Rotherham this season. They're by far away the worst team in the division. And then that game against Huddersfield where the first, it's just very bad football. Two bad teams playing each other. And not that we deserve to come out of it with anything, but the lack of full momentum, the lack of energy on show spell trouble. And it's pretty unforgivable to go into those 2 games, not get your results and expect to stay up. And I mean, it's a wider issue, really, because, I mean, is it the last six seasons or 7 seasons? We finished somewhere between 17th and 20th. I mean, since, how long have I had a season ticket? I've been going down since a kid, but I've had a season ticket for 12 years, I think. And in that time, I've seen us finish in the top half once. So, I mean, you can't keep running from it. It grabs you eventually. It's a shame that it came in this season when we had new owners that have come in who are ambitious, are off the pitch anyway, doing all the right things. And everyone is on board with them. It's a shame that it's happened this season. But, I mean, I don't think we can argue with it. We've been fighting against the tide, trying to swim against the tide for years now, and it catches up with us eventually. So, I mean, we did it to ourselves, like I said.
I think you're right, Matthew. Last 7 seasons, I was looking earlier at that run. I think nowhere above 17th during that time. I visited twice to St Andrews this season, if you class the season that's just finished, for September. I think Matt John Eustace's last game. I was there for the Albion game, which Blues won. I was back there in December when Leicester visited. On both occasions, well, Blues beat the Albion, and it was a narrow win for Leicester. But the bit that struck me, particularly with the new ownership, they'd given St Andrews a facelift. The feel around the place was just totally different. The stands were complete. Obviously, the issues you've had there with the Tilton and the Cop, and that was, I think, the Leicester game was the first time it was complete. Brilliant atmosphere, fireworks before the game. Such a feel-good atmosphere. Again, with the new owners coming in, it felt like Blues would be on the up, but just kind of falling away. Do you think that feel-good factor continues into next season? Do you think the board will invest as much as they can within the limits of what they've got to give it a good go and bounce straight back?
I think so. I mean, I'm a Blues fan, so there's every chance I sound very arrogant now, but I think we are already favourites to come straight back up. I think we have quite a large budget because of various things that have happened with the PSR and what the new owners are able to invest and increase revenue and the money we've gotten from Jude Bellingham's sale. We're in a really good position. If we'd have stayed up, we'd have been in a fantastic position. We'd have loads of money to spend. As it is, we should have the biggest budget in League One, probably the biggest budget that League One has seen for ever, maybe, or a long time. There are still some question marks around Tony Mowbray, whether or not he can come back. We haven't heard anything to the contrary, but there are always rumours. And he's been away with a very serious illness, as we understand it. So his health needs to come first. He needs to make sure that he is, you know, well and able to recover. So it's about how quickly we can adapt if he's not able to come back. We're in a very sort of crossroads of a situation where we have 5 players on loan and 8 players out of contract. And then I think what we have left is like 15 senior contracted players. 7 or 8 of those could be leaving. So the overhaul this summer is going to be huge. But it's a real chance to reset. It's a real chance to go in a new direction, move away from this. Oh my God, how would you describe our football over the last few years? Dogged. I don't know. Functional. Not been great. It's not been very good to watch, but this is a chance to, especially if Tony Mowbray is able to come back. I was a massive fan of that appointment. I'm a big fan of Tony Mowbray, and the stuff we played when he was with us was a lot more promising. So it's a chance to head out on a new direction. Totally rebuild the squad. All the noises from the owners are fantastic. This new, I'm sure everyone's heard about the new sports quarter they have planned for the east side of the city and the old wheel site, which is just insane to think that is associated with my club. I mean, you mentioned it, John, have the last 5 years with the stadium closed, and now we've got Tom Brady involved in the new sport, £3 billion sports quarter being built. It's just remarkable to think about. So I think the signs are good, and it's a new chance for us to head out in a new, more positive direction. I just hope we grab it. I do have to say, I have to temper it all, though, with League One is not a walk in the park. League One is an incredibly difficult division to get out of. And we've seen Ipswich, who we'll talk about later, Sunderland, Portsmouth, spend however many years down there. I think some Blues fans might be in for a bit of a rude awakening for how difficult it's going to be to get out of it. Definitely not going to be a 130-point season or anything like that. But I think the signs are positive. I'm feeling a lot better about it than I thought I would, if that's okay to say.
Yeah. That word reset, Dave, I think is great that Matthew uses, because some teams have used things like that as a bit of a reset. I think back probably quite a while ago, Leicester dropped into the third tier, I think, for one season, kind of fired themselves back up. Steve Howard, Matty Fryer, Ipswich, I know we're in there a little bit longer, but there have been teams that have kind of dropped and they have had a chance to reset, restructure and kind of come back a lot stronger from it. And that's a real chance for Birmingham with the backing that they've got to do that next season.
I think it's a big opportunity for Blues. I mean, in some ways, this hanging on and hanging on and hanging on, it just sucks the life out of you. Yes, if they'd stayed up, possibly all this reinvestment could have gone on at a higher level and all of that. But if you can get it right by going down to League One, we will come on to Ipswich in a bit. It is that momentum thing. You know, last season, Sunderland eventually came up and then they got to the playoffs, didn't they, in the Championship. You know, Coventry City got back up and they've had 2 great seasons in the Championship over the last couple of years. So I think there's a real opportunity for Blues next season. I mean, the real difficulty is the Tony Mowbray position. And I worked for Tony for a couple of years at the Albion. I've got an enormous amount of time for Tony Mowbray, and I think he would do a fantastic job at Blues. But I think you've got to decide in the next sort of 10-12 days, is he coming back or isn't he? Because as Matthew says, you know, there's 13 players five on loan and 80 out of contract or whatever it is, that's 13 players that might not be there next season. You might want to get rid of a few more. Somebody's got to come in and grab hold of that now, because Blues have got the wherewithal to do something quite impressive next season, I think, in League One. But you've got to, if you're going to restructure your entire squad, you've got to start doing it now. And you want to have a bunch of that in before 1st of July, whenever it is that you come back for pre-season training, you know. So I think you've got to make your mind up. Is he coming back or not? And if he isn't coming back, get your new manager in sharpish. And of course, you know, Rossini has been mentioned already, hasn't he, after leaving Hull a couple of days ago. And there will be other names knocking around. I think that's the biggest thing for Blues. They've got to grasp that nettle. Is Tony going to come back? And if he is, great. Absolutely brilliant. If he isn't, deal with it now.
How much are the fans, Matthew, looking forward to a bit of an adventure, travelling to some of the grounds that maybe they've not been to for some time? But as you say, it's going to be tough. Dave mentioned momentum. You've got kind of Wrexham coming from League Two into League One, and they'll try and be a force to reckon with. But you've got some trips to the glamorous locations of Shrewsbury and Burton. But for kind of ground fanatics wanting to tick off stadiums, it's a great opportunity, assuming you have a successful season, to kind of tick off a few new grounds.
Yeah, I think fans are still sort of coming to terms with it a bit. I think there's an air of sort of expectancy to run away with the league, and there's already been a lot of people talking about, you know, the sort of, where are we going to be able to go? Where are we going to get a big away allocation? I think places like Reading and Huddersfield have just gone down, obviously, off a big away allocation. So I think everyone's positive. Everyone's very expectant that it's going to be a good season. I have to say, the whole Wrexham thing is going to be quite annoying, isn't it? I mean, they're more prepared for the sort of Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds meet Tom Brady episode of that documentary. That's going to be a pain in the ass. But yeah, honestly, I think everyone's just sort of hopeful of a positive season. I mean, I couldn't tell you the last time we won more games in a season than we lost. I'm just really hopeful that, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to say, but finishing like fourth is obviously would be a disappointment at the time, but that would mean that we won more games than we lost. And that would be an amazing thing. I haven't experienced that for, when was the last time I experienced that? When was the last time we got promoted to the Premier League? Remarkable. It's been a proper miserable few, like 10 years or so as a Birmingham City fan. Longer, actually. Yeah, it might be nice to just win some games. I mean, I hear that's nice. It's free.
I've got vivid memories of Blues winning the auto windscreens as well when they were last in, or one of the last times they were in the third tier. I've got an image of John Gale carrying it.
On the fence. I made this one of the greatest pictures ever taken for me. Unbelievable image. Yeah, I actually, before we got relegated, I absolutely totally forgot about the Bristol Street Motors trophy. And that we'll be playing over international breaks and everything. I was like, oh, this is going to be a lot of football. There's a lot of football in League One and League Two, isn't there? And now with this new Sky Plus deal, with the, there's going to be even more games on TV. There'll be a lot to keep track of. I guess that's also one of the worries, though, for the club. I mean, there'll be more games, but are we going to be able to fill out? I think most games will be like 20,000 plus attendances. But, you know, on a Wednesday night when we're playing, I know, Leighton Orient at home, are we going to be able to get a decent crowd in for that? And especially for the Bristol Street Motors trophy games. I'm not sure they're going to be very well attended, but yeah. The worst thing would be if we end up in a group with like Villa under 23s or something like that. There's no good way. There's no good outcome to that. There's no way that ends well for anybody. So honestly, I'm just hopeful for a positive season. I just want to win some games, play some nice football, hopefully under Tony Mowbray. But if it's somebody else, they're going to have like a very interesting project. I do wonder, actually, last point, I do wonder how, I say this as a Birmingham City fan, so there's a chance I'm biased, but I think it's a very interesting project. Say Mowbray isn't able to come back. I do wonder if we could maybe persuade or seduce someone of a higher standing to join, maybe like a Liam Rossini or someone like that, to offer them like a 5-year project. Say, this is how you can get us. You can do an Ipswich. You can get us promoted multiple seasons in a row, get us to the Premier League. There's a fair amount of money. There's a new stadium on the way. I do wonder how of an enticing project it is for some progressive young managers. But we'll see. I'll have to wait and see for that.
I definitely think any Birmingham fans listening will be enthused now. League and Cup double on the way. Liam Rossini in charge.
They are Wembley. They are Wembley. That'll be nice.
Yeah. Just before we move on, I think on behalf of the three of us, Toby Mowbray, wish him really, really well. An absolute gent of a bloke. It was a pleasure to interact with. Absolutely. Dave, you more so than me over the years, but an absolute gent and someone we wish to be back very soon.
It'd be great to see him back. It'd be a shame if it was all ending in this way. It'd be nice to see him. And of course, he got Sunderland promoted, didn't he, a couple of years ago? So he knows the course and distance in League One. So I think he would be great for Blues. But as I say, I just think they need to make that decision sooner rather than later.
So Rotherham went quite some time ago, kind of bounced in between League One and Championship. And Steve Evans now back in charge, which certainly makes that an interesting project. Just touching on Huddersfield very briefly, Dave, but again, another team that went through managers, started with Neil Warnock, moved to Darren Moore, changed again towards the end of the season. Another team that have flirted with dropping into League One for some time. Again, feels like they're ready for that reset. They have that promotion to the Premier League, but they've never really threatened to reach those heights again. Briefly under Carlos Corberan, but last few seasons have been pretty desperate.
Well, again, you've got to question what was the thinking with Neil Warnock at the start of the season. I mean, once you've decided to give Neil Warnock the job, you've got to see it through, I think. I mean, the last week or so, there's been lots of stuff coming out about him. They didn't have exactly the most arduous pre-season, shall we say. And that's, that all the various little bits and pieces of stories I've heard about Neil Warnock over 25, 30 odd years, that's the way he manages. He gets players on side and he does it his way. And it's probably not in the modern game, not a way that anybody else is doing it. But once you've started doing it that way, then you've got to see it through, I think. Because, Darren Moore came in for a bit and then Brighton Rider. Yes.
Well done. Cheers, Dave, because I had forgot. Hence, I just said another new manager came in.
They want to play a different way. They want a team that can play for 90 minutes as opposed to about 75. And they were both left at sea, really, I think, with that Huddersfield team. Whatever you think of Neil Warnock, over the years, he has been successful doing it the way that he does it. At both ends of a division, he saved teams from relegation. He's won teams promotion. If you're going to... That's what I always find difficult is, you have a manager in pre-season, you let him buy his players or, be involved in the buying of the players or whatever, and then you get rid of him couple of months into the season and somebody else has got to pick up all those pieces. The time to get rid of Neil Warnock was last May. Thanks very much. You kept us up. Off you go. And then you start again. Once you start chopping and changing like that, as Blues have found, you're in big trouble. You're in really big trouble and it rarely works out well. You don't necessarily always get relegated, but you generally have a lousy season. Sunderland, a little bit higher up, are another one. They got rid of Tony Mowbray, which the Blues is delight. And it's been hopeless ever since. It's been a mess. That sort of stability, I think, is really, really important. And you should be making your plan for the year ahead now, not reacting to something in September.
Just touching on, Matthew, the teams that did survive, former Premier League team, Sheffield Wednesday, Blackburn, Queen's Park Rangers, Stoke, to some degree, were all kind of thereabouts. Plymouth were the other team that survived after coming up from League One. I suppose Sheffield Wednesday and Queen's Park Rangers stand out a little bit. Danny Roll at Sheffield Wednesday, Martin Cifuentes at Queen's Park Rangers. One or both of them seemed doomed at one stage, but both of them have just gradually risen up the table really impressively. Young managers, potentially with bright futures ahead of them. I don't know what you've made of those two teams or those two managers in particular.
I mean, taking off my Blues hat for a second, I think these are the stories of the season for me. I think Danny Roll especially is, in my opinion, manager of the season. I wrote down the statistics earlier about Sheffield Wednesday only won one of their first 18 league games this season. They had 2 points after 10 matches, 9 points adrift. I mean, even more recently under Danny Roll, they lost to Huddersfield in March. Things looked a bit hopeless. Were beaten 6-0 by Ipswich. Things looked a little bit hopeless. They weren't actually, despite all the good run they've been on under Roll, they weren't actually at the relegation zone until about 2-3 weeks ago, if I'm right. But in the last 14 games, they've only lost three, fewer than Leicester, Leeds and Southampton. And to do this while the whole Chancery saga is still going on in the background, while he's still making noise, there's still protests against him, it's unbelievable. It's amazing. I think it's an absolutely sensational job what he's done. And to do it in the way that he's done it, where it's exciting and good football to watch, I think it's a remarkable story. I think they've got some quite talented players, some young talented players in there. And I think the only problem now is, can they keep hold of him? Because I think they've still got this cloud over the head and They have some talented players that, but if they want to progress up the league, they need a bit more help. They need some turnover. And that requires the support of Chan Siri, both in terms of transfers and contracts. And I'm not sure that's something that they have or the club has. If they can keep hold of him, I would feel very positive for them for the next season. Otherwise, they might be looking for another miracle worker. And then I think Marti Cifuentes has done a similarly amazing job in very different ways. And the squad that he inherited was very much formed for Gareth Ainsworth, who is a lot more direct, a bit more physical with his football. But Cifuentes, absolutely fantastic job. Like the tactical now is to navigate the choppy waters of the championship. I mean, as I understand it, they're a bit more of a lower block team. But then when they played Leeds a few weeks ago, absolutely battered them 4-0. Were aggressive, pushing high, pressing defenders and the goalkeeper. I think it's a genuinely impressive job both managers have done. If both clubs can keep hold of their managers and support them in the summer and into next season, I'd feel very positive for both. I don't think either one will be in a relegation battle next year. I think they will be comfortably mid-table, possibly higher. I think, yeah, stories of the season for me.
It's that word momentum, isn't it, Dave, for maybe Sheffield Wednesday and Queen's Park Rangers might build on that end of season form, but then you've got Blackburn and Stoke, big teams in that league that just seem to keep dropping and can't get momentum. Stoke keep changing managers, trying to change that formula, but still ending up in that struggling position. And maybe those are two teams that might fear for things next season. Blackburn, total change this season, lost Yondell Thomason, lost the style of play, financial issues by the sounds of it, and you fear that they might keep kind of struggling towards the bottom end.
Stoke, I remember right at the start of the season writing some stuff about Stoke, and they brought a lot of players in, and there was a lot of positive talk about Stoke for a run at the top six this season, and obviously that didn't last very long, and Alex Neil was on his way shortly enough. Blackburn, under Thomason, they played some fantastic football, but it was you score four, we'll score five a lot of the time, and that's great when it works, and not so great when it doesn't. And quite often, with a team like Blackburn, it's not going to work because you haven't got the players that a Leeds or a Southampton or a Leicester have got. So, I mean, there's a lot of hard thinking, I think, from those clubs. Like Matthew, I think a lot of John Eustace as a bloke, I think he's a, as Dean Carley used to call him, he's a solid citizen. I think he knows what he's doing, and I think he'll do all right. He'll battle against the tide, but Blackburn look a little bit like the next Birmingham in the sense that they've been down the bottom end for a while now, and eventually you just can't keep struggling against the tide, and eventually you do fall for it, and they might be one that goes. I think.
I do think a special mention needs to go to Millwall as well, who the job that Neil Harris has done. I mean, looking at the table, they finished a lot higher up the table than I thought, but I think the stat is right that if the season started when Neil Harris took over, they'd be top. It's a pretty amazing job he's done. And to finish as high as 13th when they were below us. So I think when we played them a couple of months ago, it was like a relegation 6-pointer. Now look at them. It's another pretty amazing job.
Speaking of amazing jobs, I suppose if we get to the top two, so Leicester finishes as champions, Ipswich not far behind. For the first time, I think since 1997, the top three all with 90 points plus. So I suppose two things that tells us. One, it was competitive for the top three, but, and you've mentioned this previously, Dave, is there almost the Premier League two forming in the Championship because the teams that come down, apart from Ipswich, who have done an amazing job, and we'll pick up them a little bit later on, but you've got the likes of Leeds and Leicester that, you know, are far and away in advance of the teams below, your Norwich, your Hull, your Middlesbrough. And there's that potential of a bit of a breakaway because of the parachute payments and the way teams come down from the Premier League. Just touching on that before we get to Leicester.
I mean, it was a particularly strong group that came down last season, wasn't it? Leicester, Leeds and Southampton. I mean, it wasn't, you know, the way you normally expect it, where it's the teams that have just gone up that will all drop through. They were, particularly Leicester and Southampton, long-established Premier League teams, Premier League winners in the case of Leicester, FA Cup winner, all of that. So, I mean, it's a little bit unusual in that sense. And I think that's one of the reasons it's great why Ipswich got up. And it would be nice if Albion or Norwich won the other one, so that it isn't that constant revolving door between the bottom three and the top three. You know, it's nice to have that different group through. But I mean, it is becoming very much that way, isn't it? It's a real surprise that Leeds didn't see it through in the finish, or Southampton. I mean, obviously, you know, financial issues a little bit at Leeds at the start of the season meant they changed the squad around a lot, and obviously that took a bit of the wind out of the sails. But I mean, next season it will be interesting. The teams that come down, looks like it's going to be the three that went up, very likely. Now, are they going to be stronger for having had that season, or will they have had the stuffing knocked out of them? That's what you've got to see when we come to next season. It's not quite such a strong group coming down as it was this year. This year it was, I mean, ferocious. Even Southampton on 87 points in fourth place. Most years, that's going to get you pretty damn close to automatic promotion. So, I mean, it really was a ferocious... And 97 and 96 for the top two is ludicrous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So I suppose picking on Leicester, and the reason they're there, I suppose, is because of what a disastrous season they had the season before. Brendan Rodgers leaving, Dean Smith coming in. Very poor transfer windows before the season in the January, which saw them drop into the Premier League. Lost key players in the summer, like some Madison, Barnes, Castagne, but probably kept still a decent core of Premier League players. Added to it with Connor Cody, Harry Winks in particular. A lot of people described him as a bit of a cheat code. But I still think massive credit to Enzo Maresca, because he came into a bit of a broken club, certainly with players who maybe didn't want to be there. First season in English management, was assistant under Pep, was assistant under Pellegrini at West Ham. So I suppose he'd earned his stripes. It was a risk for Leicester to bring someone in kind of untested, but it's massive credit to him. He brought the club together. He implemented a new style. Very Pep-esque, I suppose, with the full-backs inverted into midfield. I think the big thing from speaking to the players throughout the season, assuming they're kind of true to the word, which I think they are, is they kind of grasped that quite early. They respected Enzo. I think because of the Pep link with some of them, that was all they knew of him, was a link to Pep Guardiola. But they wanted to buy into that method. They wanted to play in that style. Start the season like a train. I think they lost two in the first 15. One of those was against Leeds. Had probably a jittery spell towards the end, but then strung together three wins. One was a big one against Southampton that kind of saw it through and gained that promotion. Best defence in the league, second highest scorers. They were one win short of breaking the record for the most wins in a championship season. It just feels like, Matthew, that they shouldn't have been in that league to start with. It's all going back to that disastrous season. But I suppose it's the pressure, maybe going back to Birmingham slightly, it's that pressure of being the favourites, expected to do it, but then going out and doing it. And for most of the season, kind of blowing the league away and leading it pretty much from the start.
Yeah, I think from week one, there was almost no doubt that they were going to be one of the two, or one of the three promoted clubs. It just depended on which position they were going to finish in. And I think you're right. I think while personally I haven't seen a lot of Leicester this season, but what I've seen hasn't been maybe the most exciting. But Maresca has navigated it like magnificently. He's an amazing job to keep quite a lot of the quite a substantial core from last season that went down, and you've got some of the fan favorites like Jamie Vardy, Mark Albrighton. You had what's the name of that midfielder with the double barrel name, that name is escaping me.
Dewsbury Hall
was like by far and away probably the best player in the division this year. Outstanding midfielder. Like I was really surprised to see that he stayed on. I know there was a lot of links with like Brighton last year, and I really thought he might have left, but yeah, I think we played them twice this year, obviously, three times this year, and they come to be dispatched us. It was barely a contest. I really, really am a big fan of the forward that was brought in last year, Mavididi. I think he's very good. He's going to be, I think he's someone who reflects smart recruitment. We're bringing him this year and he's flourished in the championship. I think he can make that step up to, alongside a few of the other players that they've got, can make that step up to the Premier League and continue to deliver good performances. I did question them at some points, especially during these, like as you mentioned, the choppy waters in recent weeks. But yeah, overall, far and away the best player, the best team in the division. Probably, well, actually, not the best manager, but and a very impressive job done by all.
It's that reset button again, Dave, I suppose. It gave them a chance to drop. And although the playing personnel hasn't changed too much, I think there's still a little bit of a question around what they do next season. Defensively, I think they got away with a lot this season. Enzo Maresca has talked a lot about adding some pace to the back line to really play the way he wants to play. Number of occasions it's Wout Fass and Yannick Vestergaard, who didn't play at all the season before under Brendan Rodgers, but then pretty much played every game this season. So it feels like if they can, they need to strengthen. We'll touch on their financial issues shortly, but it will still be a challenge to come back up. But it has given that chance to reset, particularly with Enzo Maresca. Again, there's an Albion link in there with him coming in. But it won't be straightforward to just kind of get back to where they were in the Premier League. It's still a big old task to move from one league to the other.
It is, and obviously, as you say, the financial fair play thing might make it even more difficult. The big surprise, I thought, for Leicester this year was that they lost 11 games, which seems a hell of a lot of games for a team that good to lose in the Championship. You know, a pretty ordinary league. They drew four, and two of those were against Ipswich. So, you know, only two draws in the rest of in 44 other. It's a really peculiar statistic. I mean, Jamie Vardy, God bless him, old man stepped up. I mean, how many more years can he carry on going? Again, what has he scored this year? 17, 18 goals? I mean,
20 in all competitions, I think 18 in the league. And again, it's just a strange one because he was doubted for a lot of the season, particularly at the start of the season, really wasn't happening. He's come back in and he's kind of had a really good run towards the end of the season that has... The fans chant now he's 10 more years. He is out of contract, so there's a decision to be made. It's whether head is ruling heart. I think if you go with your head, you thank him and you wish him well and you build a statue. But I think another season in the Premier League, I hope he's not listening, he'd kill me. But I do think that's beyond him. Maybe he's an impact sub now and again, but I just didn't. There was times where he wasn't Jamie Vardy, but he came good at the end of the season.
St Andrews in League One, Jamie Vardy, 35 goals. There you go. You heard it here first. I mean, you know, you go back to sort of December, January time, and we're all talking about Leicester. Are they going to get 110 points, and it's going to be the, you know, the best team that there's ever been in the Championship, and they're running away with it. And you know, I suppose when you get to that level, and the second half of the season's not quite so good, I remember reading stuff on Twitter. The Leicester fans all. He's got to go. You know, he's lost the plot, and we need a plan B. And I mean, I think they're all cliche, but if you'd have been offered top of the table with 97 points and 89 goals in August, everybody at Leicester would have said yes, thanks very much. We'll take that now. How much more is he supposed to do than what he's done there? I mean, I like his approach to it. You know, the idea that he lived at the training ground for 2 months when he got the job, and he steeped himself in the club, which is a great thing and not a necessarily a usual thing these days. You know, he's clearly bought into the whole culture of the place. And Leicester has got a, because of the ownership and what's gone on over the last sort of 10 years, it has got a different feel to it in that sense through, you know, great days and through tragedy and stuff. He clearly feels a part of that club. He understands that club. And I think, he's proved himself, you know, to be worthy of giving it a real go in the Premier League. The shame will be if they end up starting on minus 10 or something next season. And then if you do that, I mean, you might as well jack in the next 38 games because there's no way you're coming back from that. But it would be interesting to see how Leicester can do next season. As you say, it's the buzz phrase of the night, isn't it? It's the reset button. They've gone down, they've sort of... I mean, the last year with Brendan Rodgers was a bit... It just seemed like nobody was happy, really, in that last sort of year. And then Dean Smith came in and it was a bit of a mess at the finish and all of that. They've sort of got back their Leicester-ness, if that makes any sense. They feel a bit like the Leicester that they were, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, they can give it a good go, I think, next season. But it was a very, very impressive season for Leicester. All the way through. All that you had was that sort of, what, 4 or 5, 6 weeks maybe where there were a few peculiar defeats in there. And that's probably, people always say the most difficult thing is getting over the line. And if you are that far in front and it's that easy, it must be very easy to take your eye off the ball, you know, and just slacken off a little bit and you know, you get 2 or 3 daft results and then human nature, you start to panic a bit. We shouldn't be making a complete mess of this that everybody's going to think we're ridiculous. But I think overall, you can't argue with 97 points, can you?
No, I'm so close to getting the magic 100. I suppose 2 bits on that. The first one on Enzo, and I said he brought the club together, and he did, and he brought most of the fans together. But there was always a bit of a tension at home games because some fans, and I do feel sometimes this is just the world we live in and everyone expects that brilliance in every game and every win should be done with style. But certainly the home fans, they were getting, a section were getting frustrated. They felt it was a bit slow. The build-up wasn't what they wanted to see. They questioned, was there a plan B? And there was a few kind of barbed comments in interviews to try and rally the home fans and make them understand what he was trying to do. But I think the majority bought into it. I think the other bit, bringing you in, I suppose, Matthew, looking at Burnley, who looked like they will go down, but they went up, and Vincent Kompany wanted to continue the same style that got them the promotion and won them the league with, I think, 102 points. And that's probably the risk for Enzo Maresca and Leicester, that he'll probably want to stick with that style, but sometimes you might need to tweak it, and sometimes you're not going to be able to do what you did in the Championship in the Premier League.
Yeah, especially when they have all these financial issues that might mean they have to cash in on a few of those players that have done so well this year, like Dewsbury Hall. There's already been rumours that some teams are interested in him. There's a few others that I've seen that have been linked with moves away. And I think the big problem for Burnley last year was they lost quite a few of those players that did well for them, didn't they? A few players were on loan and a few others moved on. So they not only had to, there was no progression really, it was more another restart as opposed to progressing what they already had. It's going to be very interesting, and especially if they are deducted points. I think, I don't know. I do view Maresca slightly differently to Kompany with Burnley, where I always thought Kompany was obviously taking the Burnley job. And sorry, Burnley fans, come for me. I don't know, maybe. But he was obviously taking the Burnley job as a kind of audition to be the future Manchester City boss, maybe replacing Guardiola. Whereas I don't get that impression from Maresca. I get the impression that he actually enjoys being at Leicester and isn't necessarily already looking forward to the next project or using that as a stepping stone, which I think is something I would always prefer in my manager. Like we've had this, I mean, had Wayne Rooney, especially someone who came in, never really felt like he was here because this is a great job. It was always, this can be a platform into English football, coming back from DC. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting, very intriguing summer ahead for Leicester. I mean, personally speaking, I really hope they don't get deducted points. I think it never reflects the league very well and we've had this in the Championship the last few years. It never reflects well on the league when teams are getting relegated on because they've been deducted points. So yeah, I'll be keeping an eye on Leicester. I think it'll be very interesting.
And I suppose that's the last one on Leicester, Dave, is that impending kind of investigation that they've clearly gone above what they should have been spending over those 3 years in the Premier League by a bit of a distance. So it would feel unlikely they're going to not get a points deduction. But I know their legal team is on that, and it's going to be interesting few weeks. I suppose similar to where you said about Birmingham, if you're going to make a decision, make it as soon as you can. For Leicester's point of view, for planning, for everything else, they almost want to know what it is as soon as possible, pending appeals and all the rest of it, because that's going to affect transfers, it's going to affect attracting players. And it's going to make it, if it is a big points deduction, a massively challenging season. You're almost writing that one off and potentially then resetting again.
You are. I mean, it is incredibly difficult. And you're right from Leicester's perspective. If you are going to be docked, okay, let's start on day one at -4. If it's -4, you'll feel like you've got a chance. If it's -10, and you're thinking, right, well, we've got to have at least a 45-point season to stay up. I mean, that's, in your first season back, that's asking a lot. When you look at what the other three that have just come up have managed to put together this season. So I think that's what you want. You want it decided now. And of course, the powers of B being the powers of B, that'll never happen. So, you know, they'll find out around about Christmas, and then it'll drag on through the rest of that, you know, through the rest of the season. It's a shame. Matthew's right. I mean, you know, when you've got the asterisk and it says deducted 10 points for such and such, there's something deeply unsatisfactory about it. I'm not sure what the alternative is, because, I mean, you know, fining clubs, I don't know if that really makes any difference unless you really, really fine them, and then that could be even worse than taking the points off them. So it's a very troubled area, I think, the whole thing. But that, I mean, I'm sure that's tempered the celebrations a little bit at Leicester over the last week anyway.
It didn't look like it, but I know what you mean.
No. Well, Jamie Vardy was in charge, wasn't he? So I suppose.
Yeah. So let's move on to the team that finished second. Surely the best story in English football right now is Ipswich. Back-to-back promotions, back in the Premier League for the first time since 22 years. Dave, you've been the closest to it as lead contributor to the Ipswich Town programme. But it's just an unbelievable story, and to try to piece it together, I suppose there's never one reason why something is as successful as it is, but Kieran McKenna probably takes a huge chunk of that credit for the job he's done over the 2 years.
Absolutely, he does. I mean, you really don't know where to begin with it. I mean, yeah, 96 points this season, 97 I think it was last season. It's ridiculous. absolutely ridiculous. The number of goals that they've scored more goals than anybody else over the last two seasons. All of the sort of records that you want, they've got all the good ones. So, I mean, Kieran and his backroom staff have done a fantastic job in getting that team together. We talked about Neil Warnock's pre-season. Well, Ipswich's pre-season wasn't anything like that. I mean, they are a team that can go to literally to the 100th minute. And the number of goals that they've scored in the last sort of, well, in added time in games has been really hugely important this season. And they've done it in big games as well. I mean, the Southampton won about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And they scored in the night, literally the last kick of the game, in the 97th minute. That, I think, was the one that it certainly finished Southampton off. And I think it was the one that really gave everybody the belief that, yeah, this is going to be the year. There's various interesting things about it. I mean, they aren't the same team this year that they were last year. In League One, I mean, they were dominant with possession. They were 60 and 70% possession game after game after game. They kept the ball. They were the best, you know, probably the best side in the division while they finished second. And then this year, quite often they've had 40%. Now, that's what you'd kind of expect going into a higher league. But to be able to go from being a dominant possession team to a counter-attacking team, changing the way that you play in that sense, not completely, but you're working on a slightly different basis. That's a big thing. And to make it succeed the way that they have is incredible. I mean, I remember saying to a lot of people this time last year when they got promoted, put a few quid on them being in the playoffs. I thought they would do well because, like a bloody idiot, I didn't put any on, did I? But I thought they would do well. I never thought that they would do this well. You know, I mean, I thought they would be sort of where West Brom and Norwich are, 75, 76 points, that kind of thing. I could see them doing that. I couldn't see them getting, you know, this. But they've been top three pretty much from the off with, and this is the interesting thing going into next season, they've had the same team broadly this year as they had last year. Certainly for the first 3 or 4 months up to January. I mean, they had one or two players come in, a couple of loan players come in, but they weren't really getting much of a look in up until then. Then Amari Hutchinson has been a revelation after Christmas. Kiefer Moore came in and he gave him something different up front, a different option. Jeremy Sarmiento, who was at the Albion in the first half, he came to Ipswich and did well. But broadly, it's the same team that won League One, that won promotion from League One, sorry. That's quite impressive. Now, I don't know that you can repeat that trick in the Championship, because that's a whole different kettle of fish. And the thing that would worry me about Ipswich, they scored 92, they let in 57. 57's a lot of goals in the Championship for a team that's done been as successful as, I mean, Bristol City, I'm looking at the table now. Bristol City in 11th, let in 51. Millwall in 13th, let in 55. So they're going to have to do something slightly different, I think, again, next season in that sense. But the way that they play and the confidence that they play with, and if anybody hasn't seen Wes Burns' goal against Coventry, then go and look at it. Because, I mean that goal's obscene. It should have an 18 certificate. It's ridiculous. Can you do that in the Premier League? Well, I don't know. But it's an incredibly impressive team, incredibly impressive backroom staff that Kieran McKenna's got. And I wouldn't bet against them scaring a few teams next season. They're going to be favourites for relegation. And you know, I wouldn't argue against that necessarily. But I think they'll put the wind up a few teams next season and they might get away with it.
Definitely goal of the season, Wes Burns by mile. If you have not seen it, you definitely need to go and find it. Matthew, you've probably got the same view as me, kind of looking from the outside in, that they were the team that you just assumed would drift away. They were the team that just kept scoring late goals. And it's difficult not to keep repeating the same thing. Just an unbelievable story, but so richly deserved because of the football that they play, the goals that they've scored, as Dave touches on. It was always one of them games when you saw Ipswich live on Sky, you always wanted to catch at least a bit of it, probably the last 10 minutes, because that's where all the goals are going to get scored. It feels like to me there's a bit of a Luton story to it, but with a different style of play, where you feel that momentum and the way they play could upset a lot of teams next season in the Premier League, and it may surprise a few of the pundits and actually stay up. I quite fancy them personally. I just think that momentum will see them through. I suppose what they can't do is rock the boat too much in terms of the players that they bring in, because they've obviously got a real good group that work well together, back-to-back promotions, and it's how do you add the quality to that without unsettling the players that have got you there. So it's a tough task ahead for Kieran McKenna.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I mean, I'm not fully across like Ipswich's financial situation, so I don't know. I mean, I know promoted teams are always, they have less scope to spend and to bring in players compared to teams that have already been in the Premier League, which is always incredibly unfair. But it's going to be very interesting. I think I agree with you in that. They stand a chance because I don't know if the relegation battle next year is going to be particularly a high quality one. I mean, Everton are going to be the same as this year. Thinking about some of the teams that are in and around the Forest, you expect to be kind of similar to this year. Yeah, I mean, they've got a chance. And I mean, I will always respect a manager who is able to get a team greater than the sum of its parts. I mean, they have just been promoted 2 years in a row with a midfield engine room of Sam Morsy and Massimo Luongo, who are very good players, but very much sort of EFL journeymen they've been about. But they're not really who you'd expect to be part of a Championship promotion midfield. The home form will be important again. I did see some of the amazing statistics that they've only lost once at home in the last 2 seasons, which is extraordinary. That is making Portman Road a fortress. That is gives you a fantastic basis for a positive season. And as Dave mentioned, for the manager to have such tactical variety in his locker to transform a team, the same group of players, to transform that same group of players over a summer to play a different way. As long as they keep McKenna, I think I have faith in to them to upset the apple cart a little bit. I guess that is my only worry, though, is if they can keep track of McKenna. I know there are rumours, mentioned Brighton again. Apparently, Brighton are very interested in him. And this is very much a side built in the image of McKenna. I'm not sure you could find another manager to do the same job with the same players. So I really hope that they manage to keep him this summer. I think they will. But then I guess it's about how you progress from there. But yeah, unbelievable, magnificent achievement. Honestly, just to do it with the players they've got as well. I'm a big fan of Leif Davis, the left back, who I can't believe Leeds let go, really. I think he will, if Ipswich go down next year, I think he will still be in the Premier League. I think he's a fantastic prospect, him and Amari Hutchinson. So yeah, I think it's just something so fun about it as well, to do 2 years in a row, to get promoted 2 years in a row. I saw that only three teams have ever done that before. Was it Norwich, Manchester City and Watford? So it's a very rare thing to do, a very special thing. So I think, I agree with Dave, I'd be celebrating all summer.
What it did do, Dave, with Kieran McKenna's success, it kind of saw this fashion of teams going getting under 21 managers from Premier League teams. Joe Edwards in at Millwall, Liam Manning to some degree, although he was at MK Dons. Ian Foster, was it, went into Plymouth. Not all of them have quite worked. I suppose Enzo Maresca, to a point, he's one of the success stories. But it has created this fashion now where teams have gone off, and that's their new route to getting a new manager or head coach, is looking at a Premier League team's under 21 side, which I'm not sure is always going to be the best option.
You've got to get the right one. Yeah. And he wasn't under 21. I mean, he was assistant manager to Mourinho and stuff at Manchester United as well. So, I mean, he had first team experience.
Mm.
I don't think he'll leave, personally. I don't think he would go to a Brighton. I don't think he would go to a famous last words. I can't see why you would go to a bottom half Premier League team. Because I think Ipswich now, they've got good ownership. They've got American money involved. They don't spend ridiculously, but they've got some decent funding. He's embedded in the place. He's embedded in that squad. The club is built around him to a large extent on the playing side. There's no reason to go to a Brighton. You know, that's no disrespect to Brighton, but if Brighton can do it, why can't Ipswich do it? And Brighton might be at the top of that curve, because any team, any sort of provincial team, like, you know, we've seen it at West Brom when we were there, you know, you can get up to 11th, 10th, 11th place in the table, and then you hit that glass ceiling. Crystal Palace is probably the same, and Brentford's the same. There's that ceiling where you can get there and maybe you can push past it for a year, but you can't do it consistently. And if Brighton have managed to do it, and, you know, they've done fantastically well to do that, why couldn't Ipswich do it over the course of the next 3 or 4 years? There's no reason why not, particularly. So I don't know that's anything much more than a sideways move, as all the Brighton supporters throw things at the whatever they listen to this on. I think Ipswich's problem is if somebody like Manchester United this summer thought, you know, all this stuff about Thomas Tuchel, well, you know, I mean, yesterday's man, perhaps he might be the fella. You know, that would be the sort of thing that would worry me from Ipswich's perspective. And I don't think that's going to happen this year. That's going to be another couple of years down the line. I think he'll be there for a little while yet. The big thing is, as Matthew says, I mean, you know, with the best will in the world, most of the players there have never played in the Premier League. They've all had good careers, good solid careers, but never touched the heights. I mean, Sam Morsy, I talk to Sam Morsy virtually every week. He reminds me of Derek McInnes at the Albion when Albion went up. He's that kind of, he's a proper captain, he's a proper leader. And he's 32 now, and this will be the first time he's played in the Premier League. I hope he has a fantastic season because he's a really good bloke and he deserves it. You know, and you know, I would say the same about a lot of the players in that Ipswich team. And you know, there's some younger ones as well. As Matthew says, Leif Davis is a proper prospect at left back. He's you know, a really class act. Amari Hutchinson, will he come back from Chelsea? Well, if I was Chelsea, I'd be thinking, well, I might keep him because he's had that kind of season. You know, that leaves a bit of a gap in there. Defensively, you've let 57 goals in there. That's not all about the defence. It's about the way Ipswich play, because Ipswich are risk and reward. They do take a lot of risks in the way they play. They pass the ball about. They pass out from the back. You know, again, going back to that Wes Burns goal against Coventry, it starts right at the back and goes up to the other end of the pitch. Can you do that against the best Premier League teams? I think they've got every chance of staying up. I think that the interesting thing will be for the supporters, because for 2 years, all the supporters have done is see that team win. I mean, they only lost six games again this season. I think it was five or six last season. All I've seen is that team win and win and win. And I don't care how good they are, and I don't care how good Kieran McKenna is. At some point next year, a Manchester City or an Arsenal or a Liverpool will wipe the floor with them, because that's what happens to teams that come up. I don't care how good you are when you come up. If you come across one of those teams on the wrong day, you're going to get murdered. And then how does everybody take to that? Will they then be saying, like they've been saying about Maresca this year, yeah, but he hasn't got a plan B, has he? You know, we should be getting in Sam Allardyce.
We'll clip that up, Dave. That might come through this time next year. That might actually happen.
I mean, that's not how that club's going to work. I think inevitably next season, and Matthew's been talking about losing more games than they win at Blues. That inevitably, even if Ipswich have a great season next year, that's what's going to happen. I mean, if Ipswich win 12, 13 games next season, that's fantastic. I mean, that would guarantee them, 45, 46 points. That's, you know, in terms of a team that's just gone up, that's a real season, isn't it? And you'd still end up losing probably 22, 23 games. So you've got to change that mindset. But yeah, you know, the last time they went up from the Premier League, they had Marcus Stewart and they ended up qualifying for Europe. So who knows?
The big question, Dave, is the Ipswich fans asking if you're doing the programme, because that will equal a successful season.
I'm available.
Just that Matthew mentioned investment. So chief executive Mark Ashton, again an Albion link, former youth goalkeeper with the Baggies, but he's paved a really great career for himself in football administration. There was some extra investment, I think, back in February, March. And again, every team has to then comply with the financial rules. So even if you got £1 billion, you just can't go and splash it out on transfers straight away. But do you think with the right investment, it is there to go and invest in the squad? It's then around the recruitment and getting the right recruitment and getting the players that fit in with what they've built already. Is that going to be the key next season?
I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, but I'm absolutely obsessed with this quote from Martin Jol, former Fulham and Spurs manager, who is a quote about how it would amaze you how amateur everything is behind the scenes in football. And I'm obsessed by that because it makes me think of, you know, think about Blues for the last 10 years. So it's amazing to hear, and it was, well, it's shocking to see, isn't it, when you get clubs such as Brighton, such as Brentford, such as Ipswich now, who have a real infrastructure behind them, have the right people in the right positions that make the right decisions and that enables the club on the pitch to succeed. I think it's no coincidence, is it? Which I guess, you put it that way, it gives you a bit more confidence that if McKenna were to move on in the near future, they would already have a succession plan in place. Which is something that a lot of clubs don't do. So it's good to see that they're doing all the right things in the right places at the right time, and can only be a positive thing for them moving forward. Whether or not they come straight back down or whether they stay up, it's positive future for Ipswich.
I will say that Martin Jolly's being very generous, saying that most clubs are amateurs because they're not usually that good, frankly. I think you're right. I mean, I think Ipswich are really well run. They've got all that kind of stuff right. The big thing will be the recruitment. Having spoken to all of the players for various interviews and stuff over the last couple of years, they are a very impressive group. They talk well, not just in, you know, in general terms, but they talk well about the group and what they've got to do and the, you know, the responsibilities on them and stuff. And they're very close to the community, all that stuff. So in that sense, they are really grounded with the support. And I think that works a lot with supporters. You know, I think the supporters feel that this is a group of players that they like. And that ain't always the case at a football club. There's plenty of times when you look at the people who come out on the pitch on a Saturday and think, Christ, I don't like them.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. this lot's a very likeable bunch. The trick now is going to be to find the right players to add to that that can make it work in the Premier League. And that ain't easy. Because however well run Ipswich are and however much money they want to put into it, they will not spend as much money on wages as teams in the top half, because that's the nature of the beast, obviously. And then you know, I mean, me and John know from West Brom, from the inside, you bring in players that you can afford, how shall I put this, that have got the ability to play in the Premier League, but they haven't necessarily got it between the ears, or they haven't got the attitude. And then that changes the nature of your squad. They're Premier League players who are playing in the bottom half for a reason at that point. All these guys in Ipswich are there for the right reason. They're on the way up. They've done all the right things to get there, to get that opportunity. The trick now is to find the right ones to come in and add to it.
As two West Brom fans, I'm not going to talk about the playoffs, but I'll pass to you, Matthew. Not asking for a prediction, but there's four teams in there that, on their day, could easily make it through to Wembley and through to the Premier League. But any playoff, I suppose, is an exciting game. But there's a group of really exciting games coming up that's going to keep everyone kind of tuned into the Championship. And it's, I know, going back a long time since the players were introduced, but it certainly keeps every league in the EFL going until the end of the season, gives so many teams something to aim for. And that team that sneak into sixth position can sometimes be the team that make it through.
Yeah, so true. I mean, I've always thought of the team that always sneaks in is the one that sort of goes far, but when did I hear this? That it's actually not true. It's like one of those false stats that people believe. But yeah, I have to say, I really don't know how to call these playoffs. Leeds have been very twitchy lately, very like quite in bad form. And they've got Norwich, who we played the last day of the season, and they were pretty rubbish. I mean, maybe they were on the beach because they sort of knew that they were pretty much in there, but they can't say they impressed me too much. And then in the other one, sorry, Southampton fans, but I've never really been convinced by Russell Martin. I know Dave is sort of thinks Southampton are the best team in the division, but not convinced. But I do, and I'm not just saying this because I've got two West Brom fans looking at me, but I'm a big fan of Carlos Corberan, and I really do think that they have the ability to cause a bit of a shock in these playoffs. I don't want to say that's my prediction, but I maybe would put Baggies beating Southampton and Leeds beating Norwich, and then it's anybody's game in the playoff. But then, I mean, we've got to battle all the curses. I mean, Leeds have never won a playoff game, have they? So that's a pretty sizable mental block to overcome. I honestly can't call it. I wouldn't. It's good I'm not a betting man, because I wouldn't know where to put my money.
Put a pound on each. Put a pound on all four each way. We'd get something back. When I was thinking about the podcast yesterday, I thought I'd put something in at the end about the team to watch out for next season. And straight away, my mind went to Hull. I've seen them a few times this season. Really rate Liam Rossini. Like the way Hull play. And then commentator's curse. Somebody that take them out of the running. But I suppose to end on two bits there, Dave. Number one, Hull City, Liam Rossini. But do you look at anyone from this season and think they're the team to watch next season in terms of getting into that top six?
Well, the whole City thing is bizarre. You can only assume there's been some sort of something going on behind the scenes in terms of what they want to do with recruitment or whatever for next season. I really don't know. Or they think that, you know, they can get a big name, and you know, that went well at Blue. So perhaps I don't know. We'll see how that works out. It just seems a very bizarre decision. Middlesbrough for me are the one for next season. I like what Michael Carrick's done there. Rob Fletcher will be grinding his teeth when he listens to this. But I think Middlesbrough are a decent side. They had a really lousy start to the season and then gradually sort of came through. In the finish, 4 points short of the playoffs. I think they've got a real opportunity again next season. And then, you know, you look at what comes down, what state they're going to be in. I don't know how they'll all look at it. But of the teams that are still going to be in there, Middlesbrough for sure, and obviously the three that don't make it out of the playoffs are going to, I would imagine, be there or thereabouts again next year.
It feels only right, Matthew, as Blues are leaving the Championship, that you should have the last word on the Championship. Whether you've spotted anyone who may be the team to watch next season, or if you just want to have the last word on Blues before they head off to that brilliant adventure and the promotion and cup double in League One.
I mean, as a team to watch, I think Swansea might be an interesting one next season. I think I liked what Luke Williams did at Notts County, and I think results have been very positive there recently. And I think if he can carry that on over the summer, I think they might be an interesting team to watch. And yeah, I mean, I do have to add, I feel like I was very rational earlier in my review of Birmingham season. And I feel like I didn't really stick the boot in enough on Wayne Rooney, who we've had a lot of bad managers over the years. Me, my dad and my brother, we go down together and we always sit around basically, you know, like reminisce on previous years. And who was the worst manager? Ita Karanka was pretty bad. Lee Clark once deliberately fielded a team of equal number right and left footed players, as he thought that might turn our fortunes around. But Wayne Rooney has to be up there with one of the worst we've had over the last 13 years, just for so many reasons. And I can't see him having a future in management after the. I mean, I know he's been on some of these podcasts like The Overlap and stuff like that, hasn't he? Sort of saying that Blues fans never talked to him. Blues fans were singing his name at throughout the first 7-8 games. I can't remember what performance it was that turned it, but towards the end it stank, man. That was really bad. So yeah, if that's our penance for hiring Rooney's the cleansing fires of League One. Yeah, look forward to it. Just glad to be rid of Rooney.
Cheers, Matthew. That was, in our view anyway, the Championship 23-24 season. Thank you for listening to the Lob podcast from these Football Times. We look forward to you joining us again next time. Thank you.
Many thanks for joining us today on the Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.